Chapter 9. The portal may not have drawn any attention, but two mutants certainly would. Part of me had hoped that the mutants would be so happy to be free of the wastelands that they would take off without a backward glance. But whatever poison Peter had told them about us was strong enough to overcome the sudden sense of freedom. Instead, they both attacked us, even though they were far from their haven and had no way back. I fired at the scaly woman first before she could reach Sorsha. The explosion from the snubnose echoed over the pasture and sent a flock of quail into the air. Before the rumble had even died away, the woman fell forward onto her face, while a rosette of blood spread across her back. I saw the owl's shadow out of the corner of my eye, but before I could turn to meet him, I saw Sorsha raise her hand.
"Stop!"
she yelled in a deep and commanding voice. The owl froze in mid-flight and hovered just above me while he looked at Sorsha like he was waiting for his next instruction. Sorsha kept her hand up and returned his stare evenly, but she motioned toward me with the other hand.
"Whenever you want to shoot, I'll release him as soon as you pull the trigger so I don't have to feel it."
I swiveled toward the owl and fired the snubnose while he was still locked in place. I saw Sorsha's arm drop at the same moment, and the owl had just enough time to shake his head before the bullet pierced his skin. The man's chest seemed to explode at the same time the gun boomed. The blue flame melded for a moment with the bright red spray of blood, and then the owl man tumbled from the sky near my feet. There was a gaping hole in his back where the bullet had torn through his body, and one wing was scorched and bloody where the bullet had finished its path. I loved this revolver. Even as I took in the sight of the bloody birdman, I heard the warning that signaled the last bullet in the gun. I had to admit, as much as I liked the power and noise of the snubnose, there were moments when I really wished it carried more bullets.
"We're close enough to the town that someone will come out to investigate,"
Sorsha pointed out when the sound of the snubnose finally died away. "Everyone will be coming this way," I agreed as I tucked the snubnose into a pocket. "We should slip around and enter the town from a different direction." A dog started to bark nearby, and Sorsha and I glanced at each other. Townspeople wouldn't be far behind, and even though the mutants were dead, it wouldn't be good to be found with their bodies, especially if someone realized how they died. We ducked into a wheat field that led away from the barn and followed it to the bottom of a hill. A barbed wire fence stretched along the edge of a well-traveled road, and I lifted Sorsha over first, then carefully climbed over. It was easy to spot Motown, where a pair of old church spires still rose over the surrounding fields. Rather than head straight toward it on the road we were on, we cut across another series of fields until we found a smaller road that would bring us into the town on a less direct route. By the time we entered Motown, the immediate excitement had already died down, and local law enforcement had ridden out toward the scene of the unexplained explosions. It was easy to pick out the gossips, who lined the sidewalks and glanced toward the direction of the mystery sounds while they chatted quietly.
"We need to ask someone where Charles Darwin lives,"
Sorsha pointed out as we stopped in front of a general store and watched the street for a moment. "This seems like as good a place as any. The store owner will know everyone in town, and maybe we can find out what they're saying about the noise."
"I might be able to help with that,"
Sorsha mused as she watched the women who hovered near the road.
"I can plant the idea that a black mage had something to do with it."
I nodded, then held open the door for the general store. Sorsha smiled, slipped inside ahead of me, and then promptly started to wander among the aisles of the store. While Sorsha investigated the canned goods and a display of locally made candy, I moseyed on over to the clerk and smiled. The man behind the counter gave me a cautious smile in return as he took in my travel-stained clothing. "We are looking for a man who lives around here," I said as I stopped in front of the register.
"And, who would that be?"
the clerk asked. He was a middle-aged man with thinning brown hair and dull brown eyes. He wasn't fat exactly, but he was carrying a few extra pounds beneath the plain white cotton shirt and brown pants that he wore. "Charles Darwin," I replied casually as I studied the glass jars filled with hard candies that sat next to the register.
"Darwin?"
the clerk said in surprise. "A friend of Mr. Darwin's in the city asked us to drop off a package since we were coming this way," I explained. "He said Mr. Darwin had been waiting for it."
"Oh,"
the clerk replied.
Well, Charles doesn't get many visitors. He tends to keep to himself, and everyone's happier that way.
We're not staying, I assured the man. Just make the delivery and move on. Those were the instructions.
Well, he owns property near Baxter's Pond, the clerk chuckled. If you can find him.
And how do we get to Baxter's Pond? I asked.
Follow Main Street here, past the police station, the clerk explained. That's the old church building with the red sign out front. About half a mile past that, you'll see Lewistown Road. Follow Lewistown past the last house until you come to a fork in the road. The pond is to the left, and Charles's property is to the right. You can't miss it. It's the only house on the road.
Well, sounds easy. Maybe we could drop off the package and then come back to town for a good meal.
Sadie Bright at the Coachman Inn has the best food in town,
the clerk said with a smile.
I'd eat there every day if I could.
Sounds like the perfect place then, I agreed. Sorsha joined us then with a few more fire sticks and a large box of the local candy. She smiled sweetly at the clerk as she set them down, then nodded toward the street.
Did something happen this morning?
She asked as the clerk started to ring up her purchases.
There was a weird thunderclap this morning, the clerk replied. Two, actually. Everyone heard it, but no one knew what it was. The chief and a couple of his officers rode out toward the Bennett place to take a look.
Maybe it was a black mage,
Sorsha suggested as her voice dropped into a deeper, more soothing tone. I knew immediately that she was using her magic, but the clerk didn't seem to realize that her voice had changed.
Well, it could be, the clerk agreed.
There are rumors of a black mage in the area. Short, ugly fellow.
Short, ugly fellow, the clerk repeated. I've heard that.
Do you want anything?
Sorsha asked me in her normal voice. Maybe some mints, I said to the clerk. Give me a copper's worth. The clerk nodded and pulled out a small paper bag that he filled with hard mints. When that was done, he checked his register, added the copper to our bill, then nodded.
That'll be 25 coppers, he remarked.
I counted out the coins as Sorsha scooped up our purchases. The clerk and I exchanged nods one more time, and then Sorsha and I returned to Main Street. Several of the gossips still lingered on the sidewalks, and Sorsha tugged me toward one of the larger groups that had taken up a spot just outside the Coachman's Inn.
Well, I can't imagine what old man Bennett must be up to,
one of the women said as we neared the inn. Morning, ladies, I said in my most charming voice as we stopped outside the inn.
Oh, why hello,
one of the older women in the group replied as the others took in our appearances. Unlike her companions, who all wore plain, sturdy clothes, this woman had on a silky dress that fell just below the knees, a complicated updo with braids and curls, and a heavy silver necklace and several rings on her fingers. Add on the graying hair, the haughty look, and her position in the center of the ring, and there was no doubt she was one of the town's leaders.
Has there been any more news about the commotion this morning?
Sorsha asked.
Not that we've heard,
the leader replied as she gave us a disapproving glance.
Someone in the store said that a black mage was involved,
Sorsha mused as her voice dropped again.
A short, ugly man.
Oh,
the leader said as she blinked.
Yes, we've heard that as well. I wonder if Norma's heard that.
One of the other women, a tiny thing with a very long nose, pondered as she looked down the street.
Maybe you should tell her,
Sorsha suggested.
I think I'll just go tell her,
the long-nosed woman declared as she started down the street. The other women began to walk away as well, and I could hear them repeat the story of the short, ugly mage who had caused the earlier explosions as they moved along the sidewalk.
The whole town will believe the story before too much longer,
the Irish woman proclaimed. That was well done, I said with a grin. I could have used a partner like you on the playground when I was a kid.
Why, thank you, Mr. Terrio, though I doubt you would have liked me much then. I used to make the boys jump in the pond during the middle of winter.
Ouch! Remind me not to get on your bad side.
Well, so far you've managed to behave yourself quite admirably,
she purred. I'll endeavor to continue to do so, I said in my most cultured-sounding voice. But in the meantime, we should find Charles Darwin. I'm hoping this won't take long, and we can be on the move again soon. I'd like to put some more distance between us and the Magisterium.
So what are you going to ask him?
Sorsha asked as we started down the sidewalk toward the building with the large red sign that read, Motown Police Department. I'd like to see the weapons he has. Maybe see if he has any tips. Also, we should probably ask him about the one we found in the wastelands.
Sounds like a short visit to me. I think a nice meal at the Coachman's Inn would be just the thing to top it all off before we return to the roads.
I laughed and took her hand as we passed the police department building. The section that had been the old church was a pink brick construct, longer than it was wide, with a wooden steeple that looked out over the center of the town. I could just make out a bell inside the tower as well as a carved figure at the very top of the steeple roof. It looked like a man with his arms held wide to his side, though it was hard to see much of the fine details. Along the sides of the building, colored glass flashed in the sunlight and offered images of plants and animals, and sometimes books. It was easy enough to pick out the later edition. It was tacked onto the back of the church by a narrow walkway and looked dreary even in the bright day. It was made of carved logs and bricks that had been salvaged from pre-magic buildings and was little more than a dark box. Even the windows were small, and I imagined the interior would have lamps on all the time just so the officers could see what they were doing.
It looks like the ugly stepsister,
Sorsha commented as we walked past. Why are stepsisters always ugly in fairy tales? I asked.
Well, you wouldn't want the prince to fall for one,
Sorsha pointed out with a laugh. We debated the need for ugly stepsisters for the rest of the trek along Main Street until Lewistown Road appeared, marked with a lamp post and a street sign. It was lined by one- and two-story homes that were just the right size for raising a small family, all freshly painted and well-maintained. There were toys in the yard and sometimes a dog on a porch or a cat in a windowsill. I could smell a pie baking close by and hear children's laughter from a backyard. It was an idyllic scene, and I wondered if the streets we had passed in the wasteland had once been as pleasant as this one. I saw a couple of curtains twitch as we walked up the road, and a stout bulldog left his porch to watch us pass by, but otherwise no one even noticed we were there. We passed the last house and kept going until the road divided at the foot of a small hill. The area we were in was definitely more wild, if not exactly a forest. It was obvious people came through here, though the more beaten path led toward the pond. "Shall we see what Charles Darwin has to say?" I asked as we took the road to the right.
I'm breathless with anticipation,
Sorsha snickered. The road on the right petered out, and soon it was just a pair of ruts running side by side along a grassy strip of land. I would have thought the trail had been given up for good if I hadn't spotted a fresh cow patty by the road. Even with that proof of life, I wasn't so sure that the clerk hadn't sent us in the wrong direction, though I couldn't think of a reason why he would have done so. The path came to an abrupt end at a muddy bog filled with reeds and cattails. Frogs croaked from the edge of the water while a heron stalked the shadows for an easy meal. The ghostly branches of a dead oak still reached into the sky, surrounded by a phalanx of young pines. And in the middle of all that sat an old shotgun cottage on stilts. Someone had painted it a bright green at some point, but most of the color was gone now, as was the glass in the windows and the front door. The old house leaned toward the left, perilously close to falling into the murky water that moved slowly past the rotting timbers that served as the supports.
This can't be right,
Sorsha murmured as she eyed the structure dubiously.
No one's been inside that place in a long time.
But why would the clerk send us to the wrong place? I asked as I slipped my hand into the pocket with the snub nose.
Because we're strangers in town,
Sorsha replied as she studied the area.
We should go back. Maybe someone else will tell us where he is. If not, I saw signs for a carriage stop. We'll take the first one out of town and go as far west as we can.
I knew this was too easy, I sighed. We started to turn around when something smacked into the tree just to my right. It made a heavy thud, and I knew what I would see before I even glanced over. Sure enough, an arrow quivered in the trunk, buried deep into the hardwood of the hickory. A long bow, not a crossbow bolt either, which meant the archer could be even further away. I grabbed Sorsha and pulled her behind the tree, even as I dug the snub nose from my jacket. At least with the arrow, I had a general idea of where it had been fired from, though the archer could be moving even as I peered into the thicket of the pines and reeds.
"You're not from Motown,"
a woman's voice shouted.
"So who the hell are you, and why are you here?"